I was driving down the street the other day, and I saw a man walking, and I immediately thought, that's an African immigrant. And that's good in my neighborhood, because I'm kind of white bread neighborhood, but it's happening. But I knew he was African, partly because visibly he looked African, but then I watched how he walked, and he walked slow and measured, and it was hot, and he was in no rush, and he was almost regal. And there's something about the African culture that says, hey, I don't have to kill myself doing it. And I'm not going to. And there's something about my culture that says, get her done. I got to do it. I got to go fast. I don't care how hot it is. I got to get the work done. The grass has to get cut. We got to do this. And I just could visibly see the difference physically that was in his mind. It was like, hey, it's hot. I'm outside. I'm just going to walk. Shauna has some Liberian friends who were complaining to her this week about it's so hot here. And it is. But he knew how to handle it. And he had a different approach. See, that's not our North American approach. That's not my approach. I hit the ground running. Morning time, get her done, let's go. And I've always got things to do, and I am programmed in my brain to get things going. And that's not necessarily everybody in our culture, but boy, it's me. And I get ready, and I always have more things to do, and I project this aura of busyness and maybe accomplishment or attempts at accomplishment, and I always feel like I didn't quite get enough done, and my friend walking down the street was just relaxed. And there's a mentality difference there. I remember teaching my kids the lesson, keep trying, don't quit. And I particularly remember it when our son Kyle was probably 8 or 9 in his first indoor soccer game, and his team was getting slaughtered, and it was, 14-0. And he was coming out to center, and I remember leaning from the bleachers up top on a soccer center down and saying, keep trying. And I have this very clear memory of that. And my thing was, don't quit, it's up to you, just try, even if your team's getting slaughtered. And that runs through us as North Americans. I'm a product of my culture, and I believe that it's up to me, and I have to try. And we can always go faster, we can get more done. I'm a product of my culture. I'm a product of a warped man who taught me that too. My father was crazy. And I'm really grateful for that. But there's some stuff in there. I taught my kids keep trying, and that lesson came through lots of things. One of my favorite kids' songs to sing when they were little was Itsy Bitsy Spider. Because you know what the Itsy Bitsy Spider did? Got washed out, and then out came the sun and dried up all the rain, and you know what the spider? Itsy Bitsy Spider went up the spout. It kept trying. That spider's my hero. The things we teach our kids shape them. Now, we were just talking to Bruce Ferguson about how where you grow up, that first segment of life, even though you don't, you know, maybe you only live there 15, 18 years, whatever, that has so much shaping power. Well, the lessons we learn as kids have so much shaping power. And my father, my culture taught me, I have to try. And there's good in that. But Psalm 127 takes another angle on what do you teach your children? What message do we communicate to them? Psalm 127 is in this group of songs that's called the Songs of Ascent. And we think that this collection of songs came to be gathered together as the songs that the people sang as they would walk the roads to Jerusalem for their 3 annual festivals. So people would be migrating, large crowds of people. And as they went, these were some of the songs that they sang. And it's called Songs of Ascent because you always went up to Jerusalem. You always ascended because Jerusalem's the important point. It's like you go up to Edmonton and down to Calgary. You know, it's like that. you always ascended. And so these are called the songs of ascent. And these are the songs they would sing. You know, we go walking in a hike or something, and we're singing, "The Ants Go Marching One by One," which is also a song about keep trying. We're singing songs that are just filler. Well, these were songs that were intended to teach and to shape. They're teaching truths of culture and teaching truths of life. They're teaching their kids what's important. Fairy tales and nursery rhymes do that all the time. I was looking up yesterday, maybe thinking of using them, but I'm not going to, but looking up some of the origins of nursery rhymes. And they are as creepy as you've heard. And they are very much communicating lessons. But this is communicating too. It makes me wonder what the songs that our kids grow up singing are. It intrigues me that a song that has had lasting impact throughout my life is "We Are the Champions." Isn't that interesting? Because it resonates with us. What are the songs that speak to our culture? Well, here's one of the songs that speaks to their culture and then to ours. Here's one of the songs that has lasting impact that they wanted to have their kids grab. We shape minds by what we sing. John Bell from Iona and Wild Goose, a Scottish songwriter, says that the songs we sing shape us far more than the sermons we hear. Because we sing those songs over and over, and those songs stick in our heads. I hope that you have some of the songs we sang running through your head later today. My pattern is Tuesday morning, I'm going to wake up with some of those songs in my head. It's just, I'm a two-day delay guy. That's just how it works. And Tuesday morning, I'll have some of these songs running through my mind. "You're a good, good father. That's who you are." I need that in my head. God in my living, God in my breathing, there in my waking, there in my sleeping, God in my resting. Ah, I need God. And those songs shape us. So the songs we sing matter. And so they sang these songs as they walked to remind themselves of truth. They sang these songs to teach their children truth of their culture. They sang these songs to reinforce what they already knew. This is "Jesus Loves Me, This I Know." This is the day that the Lord has made. I found myself singing that earlier this week. Just the ones that come back and shape us. So let's look at what did they sing? What were the truths they thought were important? Here's one of them. Psalm 127. "Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, guards stand watch in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves." Children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court. This falls into the category that's often called a wisdom psalm. It's sharing truths of life. But the truths that they wanted to teach their kids through this psalm is the truth that really, you aren't in control. Everything depends on God. I wake up trying, and I teach my kids, keep trying, and the itsy bitsy spider's my hero, and this says, the itsy bitsy spider needs help. And so do I. Unless God is helping, your life doesn't amount to much. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain, and it is the picture of a physical construction. You need a master builder. But it's also the picture of growing a family. Unless God is involved, the builders labor in vain. It's empty. And unless God helps the city, the guards can't do much. Guards aren't bad. Guards aren't useless. But you need some extra help. And unless God protects our city, not much we can do. If we get overwhelmed by enemies, we probably can't protect it no matter how good our guards are. I need help. And that's where this psalm starts. There's nothing wrong with human effort. And it's not saying don't try anything. It's saying you can't do it on your own. I am ultimately not in control unless God steps in to the efforts of my life. There is not much that I can do. We kind of know that. That's kind of a basic truth. I'm not in control of my health. I'm not in control of the circumstances of drivers around me. I'm not in control. Big windstorm in our area on Friday afternoon. Trees are popping. I'm not in control of the tree in front of our house. And neither is Shauna, and she hates that. Because that tree was rocking, and it's coming down by our choice before it's something else's choice. I'm not in control of so many other things. But I need to be reminded that I'm not in control. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat. You can put in all the effort you want, but you aren't ultimately in control. And I just feel the pressure come a little off as I say that, and I hope you do too, that it's not all up to me, because my culture says, do it. And this says, you know, God's going to have to help you out. That's how it works. And I feel a little bit of relief. See, in their world, there would be all sorts of uncontrollable barriers to a successful life. They're an agricultural society. They plant their seeds, and then you wait. There's no irrigation, and there's no other options. If the rain doesn't come, if the insects do come, if the disease comes, you're done. And all those out-of-control elements cause dependence on God. But there's also, in an agricultural society, the worrying element of invading countries and other nations and other people groups coming. And, I'm not really in control of that either. Unless the Lord builds the house, you labor in vain. And God loves to bless his people with goodness. And so God does step in. It's not all up to me. I don't just work. More effort is not the solution to everything. And sometimes I just need to back off. This is really foundational stuff. And it's not rocket science. This is Jesus loves me, but, you know, it's that very simple, very basic. But I have to come back to it. We, in our culture, come back and say, unless God's stepping in, I don't have ultimate control. One of the other expressions of this idea is a proverb that I always catch when I read through the Proverbs. And this is 16:1. To human beings belong the plans of the heart, but from the Lord comes the proper answer of the tongue. And the Proverbs are these catchy expressions of truth, and the idea of this one is, it's human to plan and to put in effort and to try. And nothing wrong. That's not a bad thing. That's the human element. But from the Lord comes the proper answer of the tongue. Unless the Lord builds the house, I need help. I'm not in complete control of my life. But I forget that, and I start to assume the answer is to try hard. Keep trying. And so while they walked to Jerusalem, they sang this song that reminded them that they were needy and they were dependent. And they needed God to fill in the gaps. Sometimes I think about There's a term in the science creation debate called the God of the gaps. And I'm not going there, but I think we live with a God who fills in gaps. That I start a business and I just need a break. A client break. I need a main client who I can work off of, who gets me enough income that I can keep the business functioning until it gets its feet under it. And unless the Lord comes and provides that client, I'm laboring in vain. I start a job. I start to search for a job. And I need someone who knows someone to connect me, and that's where God steps in. Unless God steps in, I don't get the job. Unless God is with me as I age, and he goes ahead and he allows connections and allows us to develop plans for our futures in our old age. And so we have this God who loves to fill in those gaps that we put in effort and we live life and we try, but unless God fills in the gaps, God covers my shortcomings, covers the things I can't, and I see his faithfulness. I see his love in those things. But then the psalm goes weird. And sometimes the psalms do this. Sometimes it's like brain crampville. They just went, oh, I want to talk about this. But not really. Because, remember, they sing these songs as they travel, and they travel with their kids. And if you've ever been on a road trip, you know what it's like to travel with kids. You need reminded that kids are a good thing. And in the middle of this psalm, they remind themselves kids are a good thing. Ah, but kids are a good thing because it's part of how God provides. Unless the Lord builds the house, you labor in vain. But part of the resource that God brings in their world to provide for them is their children. So the second part of the psalm reminds the people that children matter. That God has provided some tools in the toolbox that will help provide for them. Children are a heritage, are a provision, a gift from the Lord. Offspring, a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior. These are the tools. The arrows are what the warrior uses, and your children are the tools you can use to fill in the gaps so that this is how God provides for you. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. And that's not a question of how many, but that has all they need. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court. And again, that's that weird little twist they put on it, but that's the idea of they will have the tools that brings in the warring analogy, the quiver is full. They have the sons to protect them, not only in battle, not only in the field, but when somebody accuses them unjustly, particularly in their old age, they have someone to stand with them. And God provides through children, particularly in an agricultural society. But still in our world, I watched lots of people my age who are helping aging parents. We have a neighbor who's just walking through this with her father right now. We were talking to her the other night. And this is part of what we do as people, is we help our aging parents. Well, that's part of God's provision for those aging parents. And this song that they sing reminds them that, yeah, these kids who are running all over the pathway as they're walking to Jerusalem, remember, Jesus' parents lost them on one of these trips. You know, don't miss that. That's the kind of atmosphere. These parents need reminded that, yeah, children really are a heritage from the Lord, and that this is part of God's provision for them. God provides us the tools to do the things we have to do. And children are one of those tools, particularly in their culture, but still in ours. And I immediately think of people who struggle with infertility and think, oh, what does that feel like for them to hear this? But those people can tell us maybe more than the rest of us how children are a blessing. And those people know the struggle of not being able to experience that blessing. But in an agricultural society, in a warring society, in their world, children were a big part of how God provided for you. And so they sing this song celebrating that. They sing a song reminding themselves that they need God's involvement in life. And that God has already stepped in to provide for them in the form of their children. Particularly in their society, there's constant need of more people. And more people are going to help. And this song says, "Ah, God has given us the people. It's not all up to me. I don't just try harder in life. I live in a universe where I am dependent. And I need God's provision." We aren't so dependent in our world on an agricultural, immediate, go to the field, get the food approach to life. But I still need reminded that God provides for us, for me. And I need to come back and say, unless God is involved, everything can go wrong. And there's always potential for things to go sideways. That pension fund can crash. The mutual fund is not guaranteed. The friends I have may not be around later. I need God to provide. And He does. And so we have this psalm reminding us that we need God and that God has already stepped in. We were in Kelowna a couple weeks ago with some of our kids. The girls all went shopping. I went biking. I went to this rental shop and I bought the perfect old guy's bike. No, I didn't buy. I rented the perfect old guy's bike. Electric assist bike. It is awesome. You got to do this. So here's what happens. I get on the bike. I push the pedal. And then I feel the help. And the electric hub kicks in. And off we go. 48 kilometers an hour. It was awesome. Down the bridge in Kelowna. It was great. But here's what happens. I put in effort. And then that electric assist kicks in and it provides some power to the hub and I am going. And it's sort of how life seems to work. I put in some effort, but don't forget that it's not all me. There's an electric... When I'm going 48 across that bridge, it is not all me. It's the electric assist and it's awesome. When I am cruising through life feeling like I'm accomplishing my goals, it is not all me. It's the God assist kicking in, and it's awesome. And I get to celebrate that God loves to come and help in life without, unless the Lord is involved, the guy on the bike pedals in vain idea. That's the point of the psalm. That God comes along and assists. And that, of course, raises all these questions of why do some people get more assist than others. And oh, there's lots of things here. But we are people who get help from the Lord. And this song reminds us that that's true and we need it. I'm not really in control of my life. It is not ultimately up to me. I am dependent. I have a good, good Father. And so I lean on the everlasting arms. And I let Him be God in all the parts of my life. But it's not all up to me. I cultivate dependence on God. And I need reminded all the time that I'm dependent. I've been at Mount Carmel for 24 years, and I'll do one more year there, and then I'm going to be done. And it raises all sorts of questions. Who is next? at Mount Carmel? Who will step in? And so that's a question. What are we going to do with our lives? I still have some years left. That's a question. Unless the Lord's involved, we labor in vain. And this simple psalm says, oh, it's okay. God's got it. God's got my back. And you, all of us, head to some new phases of life, because we're always doing that as humans. God's got our back. We're okay. But we're dependent. I don't just try hard. I don't control a lot of my life. And this flies in, this idea of dependence flies in the face of the North American ethic. I'm immersed in this idea that it's up to me and I have to try. And this says, just back off a little bit. You're dependent. But it also says, I didn't accomplish everything myself. My Western mentality, the resources in our nation, the circumstances, particularly that North America is in, is part of what gives us what we have. It's not all us. We have a naturally protected mass of land. We have a whole bunch of resources. We have control of our trade. This is God's gift. I didn't create my life. It was given to me. The deck has been stacked in our favor in our culture. And so not only do I individually have to realize that, but we as a nation and we as people need to realize we have been given excessive blessing. And that's a tool that we can use. In a sense, that's God's provision. But we are dependent. And so I cultivate dependence. So this idea that I don't have complete control. And that's been easier for me the last little while as I've started looking towards the end of Mount Carmel. To realize, God's going to have to fill in some gaps here. I have some obvious holes in my life, both in terms of Mount Carmel and in terms of my own future. And, I need God to step in. But not only do I cultivate dependence, I cultivate thankfulness. That God comes along and helps me as I pedal. That God comes along and gives wind to my sails, if you want to use the boat analogy. That God has come along and provided for me. We have, and this is actually written on my notes, Jody, we have a good Father who loves us. But we sang, good Father, who wants good for us and who turns difficulty to good. I love the line of Dallas Willard who says, with God as your Father, the universe is the safest place you could be. And we're in a good place, and we have a good Father, and so I become thankful. So I cultivate dependence. I remind myself that it's not all me. I cultivate thankfulness, but I also do cultivate effort. That God really steps in, but he also wants us to be involved. And I don't just sit and wait for God to provide financially without taking a job. And I don't just expect that food will grow in my garden without planting seeds. And so I say, I will put in effort. And this isn't a recipe of apathy or of paralysis. Oh, I can't do anything. I have to just wait for God. This is a combination psalm that says, you're going to build the house, but unless God's involved, it's not going to amount to much. But you're going to build the house. And so I put in effort, but I do it thankfully, I do it dependently, and I need God's involvement. And then I cultivate acceptance. I cultivate the idea that not everything goes my way, that not everything goes our way, and that I can trust that God has his hand on it, and I accept it. I love the line Jesus used in the Sermon on the Mount. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Don't panic, kid. Don't freak out. Each day's got enough trouble of its own. And that's the mentality of this psalm. You're going to be okay. God cares. And so I can accept what is. Man, it's this gentle reminder that we're okay. And we're in a good place, and God does care. This isn't brand new truth, I hope it's not. This isn't on things we don't know. But these are the foundational ideas that we come back to and say, oh, yeah, I need God's involvement. In so many ways, that idea, this idea that we need God, is what the idea of Sabbath expresses. The Jewish people very much practiced the Sabbath, and it was one of their distinguishing features. They were the people who only worked 6 days a week. One of my friends says, in the Roman Empire, these were the lazy bums. Because they took a day off every week. What kind of work ethic is that? But they trusted that God was involved. And the idea of Sabbath is, I can't control my life anyway. I will rest. I will take a day and I will stop. And in that stopping day, I express my trust that God is still active, that God still cares. And so what do we do with this? How do we express this idea of it all depends on God? Well, maybe it starts at that Sabbath idea. And maybe it's not a whole day, or maybe it's not only a day. But maybe it's something that you feel like I have to do. I just have to get this done. And maybe as an expression of trust that it's up to God, you just take your foot off the gas a little bit on that idea. Maybe we just need to select something and say, ah, I'm just going to back off a little bit. And not push so hard, try so hard, work so hard. Not as an act of laziness, but as an expression of trust. Maybe even as an act of protest against our society that says it's all up to you and you got to do it. And maybe we say, no, I'm not doing it. The Sabbath is this reminder that I'm not in control. So maybe there's something you have to do. You just have to get done. That you need to step back a little bit and just say, I'm not in control. And I'll do my part, but it's going to be up to God. And I just hold it a little looser. Mount Carmel is celebrating its 50th anniversary in a couple weeks. And I have this list of things that has to get done. And I've inspired myself to be really lazy about it. Actually, Psalm 127 inspired me about that. I need God to come through. I'm not going to be really lazy about it. But, or I'm just going to take my foot off the gas a little bit, like, it's okay. It'll be fine. I don't know what your it'll be fine is. But we live in a world that says you have to try. But I started talking about seeing the African walk down the street. Do you remember the Lion King? Hakuna Matata means no worries. Is that Lion King? I didn't check. It is, right? Hakuna Matata means no worries. And in North America, we are driven to prove ourselves and prove and improve everything. But the rest of the world has some lessons to teach us. And the ancient world in Psalm 127, and God in Psalm 127, has some things to teach us. I can take my foot off a little bit. I can let God's assist come in and propel my life. It's not all up to me. Because I'm not in control. And I can relax in that. And I'm invited, we are invited to relax in that. We're going to sing Our God Reigns. That's a pretty good ending. Because He's in control, not us. Let me pray, and then Jody and friends will come, and we'll sing together. Father, thank you that you are in control. And I think of you coming into our lives and providing the push when we need it. And I ask for that. But help us to be willing to trust you, to not just drive ourselves and push ourselves, but to know you've provided already. You've provided for us in so many ways, but unless you continue to work, we are not in good hands. But we are in good hands with you, and we are grateful for that. So we acknowledge our dependence. Please reign in our lives. Thanks.